good day to you from episode 14 of our podcast series, Project Breakaway, a metaphorical and literal time in the day when we here at Predator Cycling take some time away from working in the back shop to come and share with our listeners what we're doing, how we're doing it, what it takes to do it, our ideas, our innovative success stories, and even our missteps and failures. If you find yourself with an interest in bicycles, composite manufacturing, out-of-the-box design, or even curiosities beyond, I encourage you to stick with us, settle in, and learn a little. I'm Courtney B., co-owner and project manager of Predator Cycling. I'm here with my partner, RM Goganian, the other co-owner, CEO, lead design and engineer, and 3D print tinkerer of Predator Cycling. How's it going, RM?
It's going pretty well. That's pretty accurate. Tinkerer.
You're a tinkerer. 3D print and everything else.
I was going to say a tinkerer of many traits.
Yes. You should change that as your LinkedIn title. Role here at the shop. Lead tinkerer.
I like that. I can work with that. Yeah. It's accurate. Yeah. All right. I'll change it later.
Okay. So as I said, you are a 3D print tinkerer. So I wanted to focus on this episode on 3D print.
Yeah.
So we've discussed about the simulation side of design. And last week we launched our 3D printed water bottle cage, the Genius. Yeah. But I wanted to talk a little bit more about the nitty gritty of 3D print.
Yeah.
Project Breakaway is a platform to discuss what we're doing here in the shop. And aside from my daily accounting and customer service emails and your Google slide presentations for the onslaught of video conferences you have coming up, the only other movement in the shop today is that little laser going back and forth over there.
Yeah, that is true.
So let's do, I Googled 3D printing in case anyone isn't quite certain what it is. And it's defined as a process of making three-dimensional solid objects from a digital file. The creation of a 3D printed object is achieved using additive processes. In an additive process, an object is created by laying down successive layers of material until the object is created.
Yeah,
that sounds about right.
That sounds right to me.
Okay, I mean, so
makes sense.
3D print has obviously been around for quite a while, but and it is available to, you know, in the smallest forms to a person.
For sure.
But I don't think a lot of people actually have 3D printers. So people use 3D print for many new and interesting applications. And at past conferences, we've personally seen 3D printed aerospace parts.
Yeah.
They were 3D printing a bridge.
Yeah.
Where was that? Sweden?
I want to say Norway.
Norway, Sweden-ish. It's something next to each other, right?
It's up there.
And then
They were doing it with welded. It was like welded with robots. Robotically welded bridge.
It was just a foot bridge. Yeah,
yeah, pedestrian bridge.
And years ago, I read an article about printing tools on the space station so they don't have to ship those things up. There are concepts of 3D printing food, which I still don't quite understand. I mean, I understand, but I don't understand.
I get it, but I don't.
I understand, but I'm, you know, to me, I'm like, oh, 3D print a taco. That's not going to happen. Any tasty one?
I don't know.
Who knows?
Somebody will come up with something.
Have
you seen those 3D printed like cake decorations or like the 3D printer that makes pancakes? Those things are cool. Anyways.
The 3D printer that makes pancakes.
It makes pancakes on the skillet and it literally dispenses the pancake.
It's a dispenser. It's not printing the food. It's dispensing the food.
Right, but what was the definition?
Isn't
it dispensing in layers?
You're not using like the material. You're just adding pancake mix into it.
Right, but that's actually what most of these printers are just doing. They're just adding
maybe
material.
That's why I don't understand the food thing. I'm thinking like, oh, plasticky based food.
Oh, no. Yeah, they print with icing and stuff and like.
Yeah, cake. I get that. That's cool. And then there's a lot of people make little parts at home and tools and
all kinds of stuff.
And even my parents, they didn't 3D print, but they overpaid to have themselves, their personal and physical bodies 3D printed.
Yeah.
And they gave them to my brother and I as a Christmas present for whatever reason they thought was. I think that because I've seen those 3D print stores at, you know,
they
malls
scan you
in areas and they're like, oh, 3D print your body for some reason and for posterity and give it to your children. I don't know.
I don't really want to 3D scan myself and have a cast.
I mean, it's cool concept, I guess.
No, super
if you
cool
wanna
concept.
Make one of like your kids or something. I don't know. Anyway, so there's a lot of applications is what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, there is.
So our printer is currently printing the water bottle cages for standing orders. But let's discuss the evolution of the use of 3D print in both our applications here at Predator, but also maybe in the sporting industry as a whole.
Yeah.
And then we can cover how we used it in the past, mostly for tooling and kind of as a physical design board for prototyping and figuring out how we wanted to use our products. And then eventually segueing that into using 3D print for mold inserts.
Yep.
And then currently we're now using 3D print material direct to consumer products with the Genius water bottle cage.
Yep.
So that's kind of the overview of the evolution. So our first 3D printer was an FFF, which is a fused filament fabrication, back in 2015, 2016-ish. It served its purpose when we got it, and we kind of learned with it. But it quickly, after a lot of mechanical errors and
a lot of hacking and putting it back together. And
you couldn't replace parts at that point because the company went under.
It was a disaster.
Yeah, we decided we went all office space on it. And if I had a baseball bat here, I would have given that copier the treatment in the parking lot. because that's basically what we did. We literally trashed it.
Yeah, I was done with it. I had rebuilt it like 6 times, and the boards were going bad, and it was done.
So talk about how we used that printer.
Yeah, for sure. So we used the printer a lot for originally when we first got it. I mean, the initial intent was to do a consumer product with it. I mean, that was what I wanted to do with it quickly, but it didn't work. As soon as we got it, we quickly realized that it was not viable. And we started making small parts in the shop. We started making little organization tools, small little, we needed tools to like hold, you know, a jig to hold a bike tube in the right spot or something that was kind of a complicated shape. And that's what the 3D printer kind of was used for right off the gun. And we were simping, printing in very simple plastics. PLA was the main thing that we were printing in, which is really easy to print, and it's really brittle and like rigid. So for what we were doing, it was great. That's where it started. And then from there, it just really started evolving into printing prototypes of our parts. We started printing some of the first major pilots that we did were all printed, 3D printed, and then to validate the shape and sizes and some of the more complicated parts that we've made, we 3D printed to validate that the design was correct. And it worked really well. It was a great tool, and for, you know, a relatively low-cost printer, I mean, it's pretty impressive that we were able to do it. And then from there, like you said, we led into starting to 3D print cores. We started doing core systems that were 3D printed, all low-temperature stuff, so all for, like, vacuum bag, vacuum infusion process stuff. And then recently, in the last, you know, couple of years, we've been starting to evolve that into some more engineering grade plastics and resin systems that can take higher temperatures. And we started doing some high temperature prints, so we can do some inserts for molds, because there's some parts of our molds that are actually really complicated to do, and it would require like a really expensive 5-axis machine to make the part, and you can't actually get the part out of the mold if you did it like that. So we do inserts that are 3D printed so that we can actually print them, insert them into the mold, and then they come out with the part, and then they're removed once they come out of the mold. And things like that. There's some other things that make sense to have inserts instead of having them molded in as a single mold. And those were all 3D printed. And like you said, we started now doing our first product that's, you know, direct to consumer 3D printed is the Genius water bottle cage.
Well, before we get there, after we trashed that first printer, which I feel like the material, you said it was really brittle. That material, well, I don't know, kind of was PLA?
It was PLA, yeah.
Yeah, you could, like, put that on the floor and smash it with your foot. Like,
oh, yeah.
It was not. It was cool to make a design of what we wanted to do for prototype, but, like, function-wise, that just didn't really apply to anything that we could use it for.
No, and it's, I mean, PLA has its benefits. It's very rigid. It's very stable in, like, an open-air environment. So, like, if you're printing in an open-air printer, it's really stable. You're not going to have a lot of shrinkage or thermal expansion or anything. It's pretty stable for that. It's easy to print in. You know, when you start getting to like PETGs and nylons and other things, it gets much more complicated to print.
So that's what we then purchased our newer FFF printer.
Yeah.
Which is smaller, but way better constructed.
Oh, yeah. It's way better constructed, better hardware.
And I mean, this printer that we use, I feel like the material is different. We use the nylon and stuff for that because it's harder. And
yeah, we use nylon materials for it. We use some other high temperature stuff. We use some PETGs. We use some hybrid materials that we have. Mm-hmm. We have an entire cupboard full of materials.
Yeah. And that works really well for creating our molds. Reusable. We don't have to break them every time. They have, 10 uses or so before they peter out.
And then also, like, for some of the jigs and stuff that we're doing now, like, we have way more accuracy, even some for them working prototypes for, 3D printing, all kinds of stuff we can do. The other thing, too, that's really beneficial of having it is that because of FFF printers are really easy to change out the material you're working with. You could, we have, probably 15 different materials on hand that we can print in for different applications. And it takes like maybe 10 minutes to swap out materials, 5-10 minutes. Mm-hmm. It's not a super big deal. Where some of like the newer printers we're using take a little longer. Mm-hmm. It's a little more cumbersome to change out materials.
And I like that this new FFF printer we have is made by other 3D I've seen their
printers making printers
like, yeah, the parts are 3D printed by 3D printers.
Smart also, like, it gives you a sense of, like, people are running these printers around the clock, so it makes you more like, they're actually running a legit print farm. We're not our little print farm setup that we have is very small, but our FFF printers that we're running now I've run them for 7 days straight.
I like this new one. It hasn't broke or break. I don't have to go throw it in the trash.
No, and we've had a couple little issues with it, like some of the bed height sensors and some little things going off, but it's been always like very
reliable.
Easy. Yeah, it's been super good. Really happy.
Cool. And then so we then segued recently into a UV curing type of printer.
Yep.
It's a high-resolution SLA-SLS printer, which I Googled the definition of, and it's stereolithography apparatus, optical fabrication, photo solidification, or resin printing.
Say that five times?
Absolutely not. But is there? Okay, so that's like hard to understand. Basically, is there a little laser and some goo, and it hardens when the laser hits it?
Yeah.
Okay.
So basically what happens is you have it's an inverted, like what you're normally, when you see like a FFF printer where you're having like that plastic dispose onto the bed, this is the same thing except upside down, but instead of like a heated heater that's running and extruding the plastic, you have a laser that's curing resin.
Yeah.
So basically what happens is you have a bed that's basically dumped into a tank of resin. And then you have either a laser or an LED screen that basically layer by layer creates the image and slices it together into the part. And so the cool thing is you're dealing with curing with UV rays. So the materials that you can use are a lot more interesting.
Right.
It becomes...
Now, this printer is it's more costly.
And, it's much more costly.
The materials are way more expensive. But talk about these materials are like an array of materials
Right. And there's a lot of things that are interesting here. So one of the things and we've talked about this a lot in previous podcasts, is the concept of designing for 3D print and simulating. One of the problems with FFF printing is that you're dealing with layer by layer and layer adhesion from each layer adhering to the bottom layer. So being able to accurately and intelligently simulate and design for that is almost impossible. It's not impossible, but it's very difficult to simulate it. Now, UV cured systems, because it's much more isotropic material, it's essentially fully isotropic. So meaning that the material properties by layer, if you're going like parallel to the layer or perpendicular to the layer, the material property is the same. Mm-hmm. So because of that, you can simulate that much better. And because you can do that, that opens us up to our entire software suite of software that we can run to simulate and design the part to be printed.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Right. Yeah. This has a lot more functionality. However, it also has a lot more maintenance, which we've learned.
Yes.
We're still learning. We're still dealing with.
Yeah, no, for sure. We've been definitely, I mean, we're having growing pains getting things off the ground. And that's why we're starting. I mean, we have, no joke, we have four products designed to release that are, the designs are done. The only thing we're working on is getting the production side of it ready. And that's why we started with the water bottle cage. Cause it's a very interesting part. It's also, printing wise was one of the easier parts to do. So we started with that,
which is still the hard part.
It's still
you
very
don't like to ease our equipment into running and operating. You like to just like be like, ugh, do this amazingly difficult design.
Yeah.
Perfect the first time.
Yeah.
Which just never happens.
No, but like the thing is like then it's like it's a cakewalk after that. Then it's like, oh, you did the hardest part.
When is this cakewalk? Where's the cake? I'll have the cake.
Where's Mika? Mika likes cake. Yeah, no. So this is, it's definitely hard. It's definitely a complicated part. It's funny because there's a handful of people that bought the pre-orders for the cages. Mm-hmm. A bunch of people are like pretty hardcore 3D print people that bought them. And a couple of people commented on like, how are you printing this? Like, cause it's not, if you look at the part, it's not something that's super simple to get. And go, oh yeah, I could print that. Mm-hmm. Especially in production, it's very challenging. There's a lot of software and simulating and trying to figure it all out and nesting everything. And there's just very complicated steps to get it to work and be able to scale. But that's the point. And for us, the concept is like once we get that system set up, the next products come pretty quickly.
Our designs are done. You've done your job. You've done that job. Just the machines need to be better.
The machines need to be better. It's also like, you know, there's a lot of, it's complicated. I mean, there's a lot of things that are variables. There's a lot of variables in the print. I was actually talking to some of our simulation vendors a couple weeks ago, and I was saying like, you know, we need simulation tools for, you know, SLA. Like they make it for laser centering systems, like powder bed laser centering systems printers. They have simulation for. Now, they don't do it for UV-cured stuff. They don't do simulation yet for it. I'm waiting for that. That would be a huge game changer for us. That would just make life so much
simpler. I don't really know what you're talking about.
So instead of just, like when I design a part, I design a part, I throw it through some printer like programs, and I see if is it printable. Mm-hmm. And then I start nesting it, I start designing it, I start modifying it based on feedback. But what if I could throw that into a simulation tool that actually simulated the entire mechanics of that printer printing the part? And I ran it through in a simulator. So I could say instead of waiting 10 hours, 15 hours, 6 hours for a prototype print, may or may not work. If it doesn't work, I got to go back in there and clean it all out and redo it. I could just throw it inside of a simulator and be like, oh, no, that failed here. Oh, look, that's
really...
I
wouldn't know how to do that. Is that a whole other podcast?
That's a whole other podcast built on top of the podcast
don't
we had.
I understand how the computer would know how
think
to,
about all the crazy simulation.
Going to happen. Well, I get that. Okay.
Well, I mean, think about
but
the simulation.
You know, like the load. So if you simulate something, you know loads, forces, wind speed, blah, blah, blah. But how do you know the variables inside of a printer? How do you know if that mechanical arm is going to get stuck or fall or fail?
That's what people like at Ansys do. That's why they got so many PhDs. but like, think about the parts. Like when we simulate our bikes, right? I mean, think about how complicated it is. All the layers of carbon that we have, the epoxy system, the molding processes, that put inside of a fixture that's cycling and testing. I mean, we're testing and calculating and figuring out failure points and our weak points. It's doing the exact same thing with the printer. So it has the printer, it has the bed, the lasers, the UV lights. It has all of that figured out inside of it. And it's actually simulating it and printing it with the model.
Seems more difficult than, I don't know.
It's very difficult. It's not easy.
Because you know how people ride a bike. How do you know how a printer prints?
Well, someone had to design it.
How do you know what the printer's thinking?
Someone had to program it.
I
mean, it's not...
This is something to think about.
You're starting to talk about, like, now you're getting into the idea of, like, anyways, it's a different conversation, but, like, digital twins and data logging of parts and taking that and running simulation with AI.
Well, if it's possible, then someone should do it because I am tired of, you know, messing around with this, you know, printer.
Yes. Yes.
And perfecting it every time. It just needs to be perfect every time.
Yes.
That's why I bought it.
So, like, you should tell the people over at Ansys to stop working on powder bed laser centering printers and start working on UV curable printers.
There you go. People at Ansys, start doing things I need.
yeah, no, that'd be cool. I mean, like, Autodesk actually just released their They have Netfab, which is their 3D print tool. That's like
is that for Netfabulous?
Yes.
No. Oh, fabrication. I watch too much Bravo.
But my point is that they Netfab is a really amazing tool that's made for 3D printing. And they now just started bringing that into Fusion. And it has simulation for 3D printing built in. It just does it for powder bed. It doesn't do it for UV.
And so, then, okay, so then after
I think the people at ANSYS should talk to the people at Autodesk and have a nice conversation and integrate it all into Fusion.
Yeah.
And that would make my life so much better.
Yeah. Set up the Zoom call now. Do it. okay, so what do you think is next? What do you think the next printer we're going to purchase is?
I want, or we're going to get?
What you want, and then I'll tell you what we can afford.
What's in the budget? To be honest, we're probably looking at, realistically, we're probably going to be looking at getting more of the UV resin printers that we have now.
Just on a larger scale.
We're going to have to scale up to be based on the
not
the,
more, just bigger.
More and bigger. because it just, with order volumes.
Yeah.
In the products that we're coming out with, we're just going to need more printers.
And they should make the materials cheaper for me.
Yeah. Yeah, they should. They should have Courtney pricing.
Especially as much as we go through. Okay. So there are, we've talked about a lot of pros and cons of these types of machines.
Yeah.
And to find the right balance of design and pushing the limits of a machine, all while producing a functional object is really a game of chess.
Yes.
Or
3D chess.
3D chess. Or sometimes a game of chutes and ladders. Because when we think we're onto something and it all comes crashing down, literally sometimes these print supports for these 3D printer are not so supportive. And I thought these were supposed to be smart.
That's actually no joke. One of the parts we were working on, I literally had this thing perfect. I had all the final parts done. And then I was like, oh, we're done. And I literally complete failure.
You always get me very excited. Oh, everything's perfect. This is amazing. It's going to work. And then we open the printer and like a print support has failed. And I'm like, what happened?
Simulation.
Yeah. Okay. I'm on board. Get it done. Anything else you want to talk about 3D printing?
No. It's kind of 3D printing is a really big, it's a big field. And the thing about 3D printing too, for people that are interested, it's super approachable. You can get printers now for like $300 that are not amazing, but they're not bad. You can totally do a lot with it. And it's a super new field, so it's updating and changing by the hour.
I think a lot of people get a printer, because I have friends from college who got a 3D printer, and then they're just like, what do I do with it?
Well,
finding an application is difficult.
Also, most people don't really always realize that you actually need to know how to model and like design things.
Well, you can go on those websites and kind of download things, I guess.
You can, but then like
really
if something...
really limiting on, right. Okay, great, I got a doorknob.
Right, and it's the wrong size. So now what?
That sounds like something I do. Measure what? Isn't there a universal size?
Right, exactly. No, but like it gets a little more complicated, but it's a super cool tool, and anyone that's interested, you should do it.
Yeah, okay.
3D print stuff.
Let's wrap her up. We thank you for choosing to take some time with us, and we look forward to future breakaways. Look for us on Instagram and LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, and in person here in Tennessee. We ask our listeners to please share, like, and subscribe. We're available on all major streaming platforms. Thanks for listening. Have a good one, and find some time to break away.